Welcome to our May 19th meeting of legislature. Please rise and join me in the pledge allegiance to the flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Could we have a roll call of members?
Mr. Hattery?
Here.
Ms. Herrera? Ms. Kiefer?
Present.
Ms. McAsey?
Yes, here.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Present.
Mr. Proto?
Here.
Mr. Randall has asked to be excused. Ms. Robertson?
Here.
Mr. Shinagawa?
Here.
Mr. Sigler?
Here.
Mr. Stevenson?
Present.
Mr. Burbank?
Here.
Ms. Cha?
I'm here.
Mr. Dennis?
Here.
Mr. Kalinka-Lair?
Present.
13 members present.
Thank you. We have two proclamations. One is Mental Health Awareness Month in Tompkins County. I believe David Balkley is here to accept it. And I'll start reading it as he comes up. Proclamation, whereas according to the World Health Organization's Health and Human Rights Project, people with mental disorders are exposed to a wide range of human rights violations, both in psychiatric institutions and outside. People all over the world experience limitation in their exercise of their civil liberties in the fields of education, employment, and housing due to the stigma, myths, and misconceptions associated with mental disorders. And whereas according to the 2007 National Survey on Drug Use and Health, less than 30% of black adults age 18 and over who had serious psychological problems were receiving any kind of mental health services. This is also true of Latino and Hispanic adults. Further, large-scale studies of Native Americans are lacking, but smaller studies have found rates of depression ranging from 10% to 30%, according to the United States Surgeon General report on mental health of 1999. And whereas a recent United States Defense Department study looking at combat troops returning from Iraq found that soldiers and Marines who need counseling the most are least likely to seek it, as many as 16% of the troops questioned admitted to symptoms of severe depression, post-combat stress disorder, and other problems. Yet of those, 6 out of 10 questioned felt their leaders would treat them differently and that fellow troops would lose confidence in them. As many as 65% said they'd be seen as weak if they sought counseling. Whereas in this 100th year anniversary of the founding of Mental Health America, our national organization, the Mental Health Association in Tompkins County affirms its support of the human and civil rights of people who use mental health services, citing the words of our founder, Clifford Beers, who said, "A pen rather than a lance has been our weapon of offense and defense, and with its point, we should prick the civic conscience and bring into neglected field men and women who should act as champions for those afflicted thousands least able to fight for themselves. Now, therefore, I, Michael Kalinka-Lair, Chair of the Tompkins County Legislature, do hereby proclaim May 2009 as Mental Health Awareness Month in Tompkins County."
Thank you very much. I don't really have a speech, but I would like to just relate something I heard last week. A friend of mine who has a nephew who had returned from Iraq as a Marine spent 2 years following his discharge locked up in his room playing video games. When he finally went, his mother, who was also a Marine, finally got him to agree to go to counseling. He went to a VA clinic near Albany. He had a 2:30 appointment. And he went in and told them who he was, what he was there for. And he was neglected for 2.5 hours. He left at 5 o'clock. So hopefully he'll try to go back. But it's very difficult for a lot of these soldiers to get the kind of help they need. And when they go for it and they're just ignored, it's kind of dispiriting. Anyway, thank you very much.
Thank you. And this is also Older Americans Month in Tompkins County, so Lisa Holmes will come accept the award. Whereas Tompkins County is a community in which over 12,000 citizens aged 60 or over make their home. And whereas older adults in Tompkins County and throughout the nation are an increasing population with evolving needs, And whereas older Americans are valuable members of our society who enhance our communities and personal lives, and whereas the increasing number of baby boomers reaching traditional retirement age highlights the need for increased support of older adults, whereas our older citizens of today and tomorrow promise to be among the most active and involved older adult populations in our nation's history, and whereas it is the responsibility of this and all U.S. communities to work collaboratively to address older adults' unique health and long-term health challenges, whereas it is crucial that communities modernize systems of care to help empower older Americans and give them more control over their lives, whereas communities can improve older citizens' overall quality of life by helping them make behavioral changes in their lifestyles that can reduce the risk of disease, disability, and injury, obtain the tools they need to make informed decisions about and gain better access to existing health and long-term care options in their communities, and have more options to avoid placement in nursing homes and remain at home, now therefore I, Michael Koplinka-Lair, Chair of the Tompkins County Legislature, do hereby proclaim May 2009 as Older Americans Month in Tompkins County and urge everyone to take time this May to honor our older adults and the professionals, family members, and citizens who care for them. Our efforts can improve the lives of our older citizens and help pave the way for future generations. Thank you, Lisa.
Thank you for recognizing our elder citizens in Tompkins County. And I just wanted to relate, last week was the Office for Aging's annual luncheon, where we honored two seniors with awards for their outstanding contributions. Our Senior of the Year, Joan Barber of Danby, has spent over 40 years with the Ithaca Kitchen Cupboard Food Pantry and 20 years serving as the at the Danby Food Pantry, all volunteer, just amazing contributions she's made to this community. And Ray Oglesby was also honored for his contributions as a long-term care ombudsman with the Office for the Aging and his volunteer work at Lakeside and at Hospicare and elsewhere. So it's just citizens like these that are, just giving so much and making this community a really outstanding place to live. So thank you for this.
Thank you, Lisa. We have no announcement or special orders of the day, so we'll move on to privilege of the floor for the public. I've had two members pass in the blue sheets to speak. First, we'll have Mike Lane from Dryden.
Good afternoon. Mike Lane from Dryden. Tompkins County has always been a leader in the area of environmental concern, particularly recycling, and I think we can be very proud of that. Something's happened very recently which can make it even better, and that's the fact that the state legislature has passed a bigger, better bottle bill. It's being delayed for some technicalities having to do with barcode and other things right now, but soon that will mean that there will be deposits on all of these bottles that we see along the side of the road for water, fruit juices, and other non-carbonated beverages. I hope that our county is poised to take advantage of seeing to it that these items get returned and not simply recycled. One of the most painful things I used to see at our recycling center was the PET bottles, which had deposits attached to them, crushed and simply returned for the plastic and not recycled, so that the deposits were wasted. They were allowed to be kept by the manufacturers. I don't know whether we have proceeded. A couple of years ago, I know they were trying to pull some of the aluminum cans out that had deposits, but I would hope that they would move forward at the recycling center to see about pulling all the deposit bottles out. It's time that that starts and that becomes a deposit recycling center, which means that in addition to the nickel deposit return available, that the deposit center could also get, I believe, another 2.5 cents per can. So we've always been nimble about recycling. That's a great thing to do. I hope the county is ready to take advantage of returning all the deposit bottles. Thank you.
Thank you, Michael. And Vonnie Dawson from Groton.
Good I'm Bonnie Dawson from Groton, New York, and I'm here tonight because my granddaughter, Rhiannon Dawson, is still in foster care down on 3rd Street. My daughter had a family team meeting today. My brother attended. My sister attended. Her father attended. I'm not sure who else was there, but the gist of the meeting was this is the visitation schedule for the next 3 weeks for Rhiannon. Michelle's going to have Rhiannon quite a bit, but they won't return Rhiannon to Michelle because if they return Rhiannon to Michelle and something happens, Tompkins County's liable. Well, it was on 5-9 Saturday night, 7:30 p.m. Rhiannon was missing from her foster care home for approximately 15 minutes or more, and no one knew where she was. I got a call from one of my friends who happened to see her wandering the streets of Ithaca. That's pretty bad. She was taken from our family for less than that. I've spent all afternoon at the Ithaca Police Station today. I'm pursuing perjury charges against Tim Little, possibly Sandra Lloyd. They've done some really dirty stuff, and it's just not right. My daughter, Michelle, today was called a racist by the family, by the foster care mother, Marilyn Ford. Never have we even mentioned that Rhiannon was placed with a black family. And my daughter's being called a racist in front of all the DSS workers. And it's just not right. None of this is right. And Rhiannon should be back home with her mother. Her brother's with her mother. Rhiannon should be with the mother. If you look at this visitation schedule, the other thing is the foster care mother works nights. You people pay for Rhiannon to be in foster care. She's not even Rhiannon goes to school during the day. At nighttime, the foster care mother is working, and you're paying for a babysitter for Rhiannon. My daughter also pays child support for Rhiannon. Take a look at that schedule. You tell me what's fair about this whole situation.
Thank you, Yvonne.
I will be subpoenaing, Frank, I'm going to subpoena you for the next hearing that I have because I did call you the morning. That Monday morning before I came to the courthouse about Sandra Loy. And so, there were all kinds of objections during that first hearing by Margaret McCarthy, and she wouldn't allow any testimony. So I guess my thing is I'm just going to subpoena everybody that I can think of to prove that I wasn't off the wall and I was really just trying to prove a point.
Thank you, Yvonne. Is there anyone else who wishes to speak on the privilege of the floor? Bruce?
Okay, I didn't make the meeting at the beginning of the month, but I did drop off CDs there. And those are concerning some of the issues of a disabled person and the abusiveness that goes on in the police force, the police department, and judges. The CDs I dropped off tonight are, one is titled Ithaca NADA, and the second set of seven is CVVH NADA. Those are covering meetings, court hearings, as well as other stuff that are recorded. They show the abusiveness that goes on when a person tries to attempt to get equipment, get a degree, try to even walk in establishments and are reporting them. And instead you get abused, and the phone calls and the FOIA requests that's on the first CD I gave you are a clear example of that. Now, I don't want to go into details. The CDs and the VHS tapes are recordings of me on Channel 7 when Channel 7 was in existence, Channel 12 in Binghamton, and also Channel 3 in Syracuse. And also at the end of it, Mac Travis himself has recorded me. And that shows my abilities and the abuse I've been getting around the CBVH CDs that I have there for you to see. But the important thing, like the mental health one, which is very important, but disabled people everywhere, not just me, and I've got copies of letters that are on the disabled attorneys group that covers both disabled attorneys or those in college getting their degree. The abuse that I have experienced is unified and all over the country, if not all over the world. Now, the Title II and Title III laws have been updated in January, but there is also more modifications to clarify it, and I've quoted those ADA laws in those. It's in email format to get the links provided for you to look at, as well as in text format just to read, but links are a lot easier.
Bruce, you have about a minute left.
Okay. And so anyway, I would like you all to listen to those discussions, how abusive they are, and all the abilities I've had have been shot down, including writing programs. As a matter of fact, the Commission for the Blind and Visually Handicapped, the State Social Services Extension of Family and Children, or DSS, whichever way you want to look at it, are saying that they don't have any proof that I've even done that. Why? Because now, in this day and age, mental health, interesting issue, is the state is now, whenever you try to get any assistance from the state, they want to go through medical exams. That if you haven't got a disability or beyond a disability you have, they want to go seek and search and find one. And so now, if I raise my voice or have any kind of issue and call out liars when they're liars, then I'm actually got to have a medical exam. And that's the issue that I wish to speak on and focus on, is in this county, no one, and Cornell University is in charge of the northeastern part of the United States. The 7277 law that I mentioned in there covers part of it. Is no department or service, including social service, Trumansburg Village especially, totally ignore my disability. And because of that, the court hearing that was held a year and a half ago was held without my knowledge. I wasn't present. In fact, I had a broken leg and I was in the hospital for surgery. One of your lawyers that is representative, Mr. Thaler, didn't even know the law 6 months later. And the judge said, Bruce ought to be lucky he didn't get contempt of court.
I'll ask you to wind up, Bruce.
Okay, that is a blind issue. And that is the courts of this county and how they treat the disabled, let alone the police department. And believe me, it's going to get worse, because my dog, last fall when I filed a complaint, the police officer that I mentioned there threatened to kill him. And that was only because he came out to greet him. Mm-hmm. And that's on tape, too. So I just hope and sincerely hope that you listen to what I've got there, because it may get worse.
Thank you very much. We have had what Bruce has given us before summarized, and there are copies available if anybody wants to look at them themselves individually. Is there anyone else who wishes to speak under privilege of the floor for the public? If there's not, we'll move on to privilege of the floor for legislators. Carol?
Hi. I just wanted to mention briefly that Michelle Obama gave a very high-profile speech about the arts yesterday in New York City, and make our local connection. And what she said was that the arts are not just a nice thing to have. The arts define who we are as a people. And that spoke to me. She said they need to be nurtured even during difficult economic times. And she talked about her husband, Barack Obama, including $50 million in his economic stimulus package for the National Endowment for the Arts. And here in Ithaca, we have many chances to do our own important nurturing of the arts, and we do that in many realms. But in particular, we have Ithaca Festival coming up. And I went this week to try to find an Ithaca Festival button. They are $5, and I had trouble finding one. I went to several places before I found one, a store that wasn't out or didn't carry them this year. So I thought I'd save you busy people some time and energy and got a few extras. So I passed around this green box, anybody who didn't get a chance to get one, just for your convenience, no obligation. There, I have some extras here. Thank you.
Thank you, Carol.
Thank you, Carol.
Anyone else want to speak? Frank Frodo.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A couple of items. First, the first proclamation that we did this evening regarding the individuals that are suffering from post-traumatic stress and having difficulty with receiving help reminded me that the same situation existed and still exists with individuals returning from Vietnam. Believe it or not, even though that's an old war, there are still individuals that, quote, unquote, have not returned home yet. The in that, staying on the same theme for just a second, I wanted to remind you that this October we're rededicating the monuments in DeWitt Park. The date is October the 3rd, a Saturday. The county's been very involved in helping to do that, cleaning them. We've had a lot of support from the unions, the bricklayers in particular, because they have helped redo a lot of the bricks on the path. One of the things that Holly Hollingsworth, he's put out a plea, we're trying to locate any families of the individuals on any one of the monuments, and we'd appreciate it if any of you know of anyone or can get the word out. We'd like to recognize the families of anyone who's on the monuments. I prepared also a letter. I mentioned it at the Water Resources Council meeting yesterday. Some of us had the opportunity to attend that gas drilling meeting at the Women's Community Building a couple of weeks back. There was a plea made by the gentleman from Sullivan County that we ask the DEC, we go through our legislators, but ask the DEC to extend the date from 30 days to review the DGIS that the DEC is putting out with regard to the hydrofracking and actually the entire DEC profile. The process only contains a 30-day review period, and if this one in particular needs more than 30 days, we're asking for 60 days. And what I did was I prepared a letter, and I'll drop one on each of your boxes. If you want to use it as a sample, please do so. But we need to get the word to our state and federal legislators that we need more time to review this thing. And there's a resolution coming up a little later tonight from the Planning Committee that'll have some of the details, and Pam will explain that at the appropriate time, I'm sure. But in case you're wondering why this letter is in your box, it's simply a guide if any of you feel moved to write a letter on behalf of yourself as a legislator. Consumer alert, gas prices are going up. I wonder why. Haven't heard an outcry from the public yet. The weather's getting warmer. Summer is here. They won't go down until the public reacts. And we've started to see them go up again. That is just your early alert. And at least three of us are aware of this, but I know that those of you that like animals will appreciate this one. In case you missed it, Saturday, a filly won the Preakness, and that hasn't happened since 1924. Some of us are quite pleased with that, right, Jim? Right, Dooley? So, and it sparks us to know why we need OTB in this county, because there were a lot of people in Cortland. I wonder how I found that out. Placing bets, so we're losing a lot of income to Cortland. But it was an exciting Saturday, all kidding aside.
Well, about every 10 years we have a referendum. You could call for another one.
Right? We may just do that. Thanks.
Are there any other legislators who wish to speak? Mike Hattery.
For those of you who don't want to let Memorial Day pass without taking time to remember and observe the fallen who have maintained our freedom, helped maintain our freedom. There will be a parade and ceremony in Dryden. Parade starts at 10:30 on Monday the 25th and is followed by a ceremony at the Four Corners.
Thank you, Michael. Anyone else wish to speak? If not, we'll move on. We have a report from municipal official. I believe J.R. Claiborne is here from the city.
Good evening, everyone.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Yes, tonight I'm here wearing my common council hat. So just give you a quick rundown of things that we have going on in the city. Most of these things happened at our meeting earlier this month. Council approved proceeding on with phase two of the Cayuga Waterfront Trail, including authorized the state, if necessary, to handle eminent domain proceedings. Second point is that we received a ruling from our city attorney's office that a petition presented on behalf of property owners in the area of the proposed R3C zone, which is an area in College Town, the neighborhood area around College Town, their petition was valid. And what that meant was they actually were filing to complain against the city for the creation of the R3C zone, which was to create a buffer zone between College Town, the College Town business area, and the neighborhoods. That vote did not receive the supermajority needed because of the petition, and so therefore it did fail. Third point, on a good note, is that the city received an increase in its CDBG funding via the federal stimulus package of approximately $220,000. So money's always a good thing. Mm-hmm. Couple of things that we have currently in progress. Of course, we are continuing our work on the water supply choice. And in fact, on Wednesday, next Wednesday, the 20th, at 5:30 p.m., there will be a special meeting of Common Council to talk about more of the various topics involved with our water supply choice. And is everyone here familiar with that? What that is? Okay, I thought maybe. Also, the Hangar Theater lease is currently under negotiation with the city. Their lease expired this past year, but they are underway with a $3 million capital capital improvement project. So the many people within the city organization have been working with them for to approve a new lease, and plans are right now to present a draft lease to Common Council at our June meeting, and there's an expectation or a hope that there will be a final vote on the proposed lease in July. Excuse me. Public hearings of note. At tomorrow night's meeting of the Planning and Economic Development Committee, which will be at 7 o'clock, which is a new start time, we have two public hearings that may be of note to you. One is on the 2009 College Town Urban Plan and Conceptual Design Guidelines, and there's a draft available online if you'd like to see what it is that we're going to be hearing publicly about. And that's at cityofithaca.org/news. Also, there will be a public hearing regarding the Cuba Green development, and this will be a change in its plans from building a condominium development to an apartment building. Again, those are two topics that will be part of the public hearing at the Planning and Economic Development Committee. A couple of announcements. One, if you've seen this postcard floating around town, there will be the grand opening for Cinemopolis. Unfortunately, you guys will be here because this will be next Tuesday, the 2nd, from 6 to 8 o'clock. So there might be a reason to hurry business along and catch the tail end of it. But no, this is going to be an exciting moment, and there will be free parking in the Green Street Garage. And it is Common Council, but it's a personal note because I had a lot to do with this. The Youth Council, which was formed, we're able to seat this year. They are up and running. They had their first public meeting this past month. I believe they actually passed a resolution in support of Reality Check and its movement to try and limit the promotion, if you will, of cigarette smoking within the movies. So this is if you've had a chance to see them in action or meet them, if it comes forward, I ask you please check them out, because this is a group of excited, energetic young people in our community. And I think also that I would like to see their excitement encouraged by just our community at large. I mean, these are people who will be probably in some of our seats in the future, or they may go into other communities and do such things. But we do want to encourage them to stay here. And lastly, since this is a local seat of democracy, and this has nothing to do with Common Council, but I figure it's still worth the plug, today is the voting day for the school district election. So, yes, I have to go there myself when I leave here. But just want to remind everyone that Ithaca City School District vote is today for both the budget and for three seats on the Board of Elections.
Thank you.
Okay, I ran through that quickly, but are there any questions? Yes.
Carol, then Martha.
I just want to encourage you, if the reality check people are they youth themselves?
Yes.
I would just encourage you to consider, to look into our nominating form for our Distinguished Youth Award. They need to be nominated by somebody, so
thank you.
Great. And Martha, then Frank?
Yeah, thanks for mentioning the school election. I was going to say
me
it,
too.
And I just forgot. And so, yeah. On the Cougar Green proposal, do you know any more about it? I mean, like the number of units that were planned as condos and number of apartments, anything like that?
I do. I left it over there.
Okay. So. Well, I'm interested if, and that's the space right next to the garage, right?
Yes, this is the area for development directly behind the parking garage, between next to the police station.
Okay. You can share that information later. It doesn't have to hold up the meeting.
Okay.
Thank you.
Frank?
JR, nice to see you.
Good to see you,
I have a similar question regarding Cuba Green. This is the second or third or fourth change that they've requested with regard to the entire project. Do you have any idea, or can we find out what the impact has been on any of the abatements that they received?
I would actually refer you to the IDA, but also our at Nails Bone with our IURA office, our community development office, because that would be information that they would have.
The reason I ask is, changing from condos to apartments could seriously impact some of the other development and some of the other individuals in town. But Martha's going to tell me where to go.
Just briefly, it's that project was completely separate from the Cuba Green that is up and running now with the right on Green Street. Same owner, but those projects are not linked. And they never planned, as far as I know, never planned to come to the IDA for abatements for the proposed one.
So there's no abatements associated with with this change?
With the proposed one, not, there have not been in the past. Now, because you can't do it for condos. Now, I don't know whether he's planning, if it's going to be apartments. I don't know whether he's going to look for abatements, but I haven't heard anything about it.
Okay. Thank you.
And I have Leslie and Jim.
Jerry, I just want you to repeat, when is the special council meeting, and is there room for public comment on the water sources of choice? I didn't hear if you said this Wednesday.
That's
or
tomorrow
Wednesday.
Night?
No. For the water, the meeting on water, the special council meeting will be next Wednesday, the 20th.
Thank you.
I said the 20th. The 27th.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Special council meeting will be Wednesday, the 27th. Thank you. And also,
what time?
5:30. And generally on the special council meetings, there have not been opportunities for public comment. If there is an overwhelming urge for that, I think it would be best to contact the mayor. But I will just note that there's also a copy of the draft environmental impact statement for the water supply choice on the city's website, again, cityofithaca.org/news. Is that good for
and if you're done, Leslie, on to Jim, and then Kathy.
I passed.
No, Kathy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As a resident of Fall Creek and a member of the community advisory group that worked with Nels Bone and a number of other folks associated with the city to give advice to the folks that were doing the assessment of the site at the former Ithaca Gun Factory, I want to commend the City of Ithaca and Mayor Peterson and temporary Mayor Dan Cogan for continuing to see to it that some of the problems at the site, specifically the pile of debris that hasn't been adequately covered and that dust has been blowing away from, are continuing to be addressed as they arise, typically over the weekend. The covers, the tarps, especially if there's high winds, tend to blow off. And there's also been some concerns and some documentation provided by Walter Hang of water runoff that may or may not be coming from the site itself, may be coming from the hose connection outside the site. And in Mayor Peterson's absence, I want to commend in particular Dan Cogan for seeing to it that these observations were looked into and that the site is continuing to be hopefully kept in compliance with environmental regulations and with some of the recommendations of the community advisory group.
Thank you. I will pass that along. Good news is always good to share.
Any other questions? Thank you very much, JR, for summarizing. We move on.
Thank you.
We have no special presentations. Under my report, Julie?
I probably should have raised my hand under privilege of the floor for legislators, but let me just ask you when on the agenda I could give a really brief report from the MPO Policy Committee meeting today.
Does that report to PDEQ, essentially?
No.
No.
Yes, it does.
Yeah, ITC.
Why don't we do it in conjunction with PDEQ?
That's fine.
Remind me if I forget. For my report, I'll just remind folks that on the 28th, Thursday, we have the 25-year club dinner. And in conjunction with that, I'd like to recognize that one of our own has been on the legislature for 15 years, Dooley Kiefer. I'd like to give you your certificate of appreciation for serving for 15 years. And I was going to remind folks to vote. I do want to remind people that in advance of this, go ahead, Carol.
While we're recognizing longevity, isn't Michelle being recognized at the upcoming?
Yes, she'll be recognized at the dinner on the 28th. Yes, for 25 years of service. When I worked as a caseworker in social services, Michelle and I worked together. At 7:30, I've asked the Cortland County Legislature, some members, to come over because we had a conversation last Friday regarding our direction to the TC3 board, the Board of Trustees. We did not conclude that conversation, and so they're going to try to join us at 7:30. Hopefully, we'll have adjourned this meeting over in the old jail. So I'll just ask people to mind the time, and I think we should be able to be done with this agenda by then. I have nothing else for my report. I have no chair's appointments, so we'll move on to the county administrator, Joe Mariani.
Thank you, Michael. I will be brief. I've brought you so much doom and gloom over the past few months with budgets and things. I do have a bit of positive news. I see in the back of the room our summer intern, Kate Stout, who joined us on Monday from Cornell. She will be assisting us over the course of the summer, so I'd like to welcome Kate. And hopefully we don't do anything here tonight that might discourage her from coming back later in the week, but I'm sure she'll be a great help. With respect to budget, I think everyone knows what the next steps are in this process, which will be the establishment of targets. And I think Jim in his report will talk about the scheduling of the next budget committee meeting where those targets will be discussed by committee and ultimately come to this body for approval at its meeting on June 5th. I don't have to tell you that we have our work cut out for us as we set those targets and then try to comply with them. And that work is continuing now. In terms of process that is happening right now as we work on those targets, we are spending a fair amount of our time right now in my department in briefings of departmental managers and staff about our budget situation, essentially presenting the same presentation to managers and staff that we presented to the legislature as a part of your retreat. So everyone has kind of a common understanding of the conditions and the factors that we're dealing with as we enter this budget process. I think we've had three or four so far. We have maybe 9 or 10 scheduled over the next week or two. So we will be busy with those briefings. As a part of looking for good ideas in terms of how we balance this budget, we have taken a suggestion that was made by this legislature, and we've implemented the electronic suggestion box, which is now available to county employees through the intranet on their office computers. It was launched a little more than a week ago. Already we've gotten 13 suggestions, and none of them frivolous. You sometimes might expect that you would get the stray frivolous suggestion, and they've all been well-considered, good ideas, and they will be a part of the package of possible things that we want to look at over the course of the summer that we will present to you as a part of our recommendations as well. So that concludes my report. Thank you.
Any questions? Frank?
Joe, I know we're entering a difficult budget season for 2010, and on behalf of the individual county taxpayer, I want to welcome you as a county taxpayer. Joe is about to close on his new home. So it's a pleasure to know you're going to be paying taxes here instead of Onondaga County.
Thank you. And saving all that gas money, I will have the ability to pay those taxes, too, with the savings that I'll realize.
You'll need it. Any other comments or questions? Thank you, Joe. We'll move on to Jonathan Wood, our county attorney.
Just briefly, the chair of the Ethics Advisory Board has asked me to report on disclosure forms. As you all probably know, they were due May 15th. Pleased to report all legislators got their form in. There are still about half a dozen members of the staff who have not. They were sent a reminder by Kathy today, and I expect they'll all be in by the next meeting, and if they're not, I will let you know.
Thank you. David Squire is our finance director.
I want to report that I put in your box the brochure for the county auction of foreclosed property, which is June the 9th at the Human Services Building at 7 o'clock. The information is available online at rentalsauction.com, where a brochure could be printed off that site, or we have some in the office here I dropped off. The other thing I want to report on is the Federal Transit Administration was here to do what they call a triennial review of the TCAT operation, and because the county is the grantee for the Federal Transit Administration, we were represented by myself and the county administrator. They do a very comprehensive analysis of almost everything you can imagine about the transit operations. They spend a day and a half going over maintenance schedules, procedures for procurement, and everything. I think there was 25 main items, and there was three findings. Of two were very minor. One was, it had to do with early retirement of vehicles which were rusted out, and it has to do with the procedure that you have to request to retire a vehicle from the FTA, and because the vehicles were rusted out, that was overlooked. So that was the major finding of the review. Interesting enough, there's a requirement that when the federal grant provided for a bus, that it lasts for 12 years or 500,000 miles. And these vehicles rusted out before 12 years of service.
Any questions for David? Martha?
On the foreclosures, is this about typical number of homes or any difference?
At this point, yes. There are still some expectations that a couple of properties will be taken out shortly before the auction. So it probably will be less than 10.
Mike Sigler.
I just have a quick question, because that one house is really neat. That's 1826?
The stone?
I mean, did that have to go through a process, like through the Historical Society or something? That's got to be one of the oldest houses in the county, I think.
Could be. It's been in the enforcement action every cycle. And we're surprised it's still out there.
And Frank Proto.
Dave, I just want to thank you on behalf of TCAT as vice chair for advancing the STOA payment. We really needed it this time.
That's good news about basically clean bill of health regarding the transit review. No further questions for David. We'll move on. Pat Bichelle is here for a report from the probation department.
Good evening, everyone. Good evening. I'm here to present the 2008 annual report. I delivered the report to the legislature's office yesterday, so hopefully everyone received it. But before I start on the report, I want to personally thank Susan Moore. She's my systems analyst, and you've all heard me speak of her in the past. Susan worked very, very hard in putting together this beautiful report, and she put up with me with a lot of last-minute changes, and so I just want to thank her for that. I also want to just acknowledge Probation Officer Abigail Bixby. She's the one who took the photograph on the cover. It was taken in the town of Caroline in the Shenandoah Hollow State Forest. And this, I chose this picture. She took a number of beautiful pictures, and I chose this picture because it spoke to me on a lot of different levels. And it spoke to me in terms of our probationers who we ask to, when they get on probation, they have to go to treatment, they have to start looking at themselves, they have to start looking at their criminal thinking errors, and we ask them to change behavior. And so, you know, this path kind of makes the big uphill turn there, and it's a struggle, you know, change is hard. And so that spoke to me on that level. It also spoke to me on the level of my staff, because probation work is changing, and evidence-based practices is now the buzzword, and we all have to get on board with that. And that's a change for my staff, because we can't just sit back and do what we always did because it's what we always did. We can't do that anymore. We have to get with what is the best practice, and that's hard as well. And then it also spoke to me personally as being a new director, and the struggles that I may be facing, especially with this budget year. But you know, adapting in my role and being a runner, it just kind of made me want to put my sneakers on and get out there and run that hill, charge that hill. So what I thought I would do is just go briefly over some highlights. I'm not going to go through the whole report. But significantly, in our restitution collection arena, where we work very hard to make victims whole, we did collect $119,000 in restitution payments from our offenders. One significant payment was of $40,000. That's a huge payment to receive from someone, and that really kind of upped, you know, the amount of money that we took in. But that's very important, and that's a lot of hard work getting our probationers and keeping them on track with payments and making sure the victims and restorative justice is being done in the community. In the family court arena, there's a couple of high points I want to talk about, our diversion services. In 2008, we had a pretty good, the law now says we have to engage parents and families to participate in diversion services. We can't just send a case to court because it's a bad case. We have to try to get the families on board. And so right off the top, out of the 138 case referrals we received, 40% we got the families to engage right off the top. That's pretty good. It may not sound very good, but it's a lot of work with the probation officers and working with families and encouraging them to go this route rather than going the court route. If they say no, I'm absolutely not going to do it, then we have to go to court. But out of the 138 PINS referrals that we did receive, you know, we referred 70% of the youth to services, 63% engaged in services. That's a very good engagement rate, and we got 44% of the families to engage in services. That's also very good. And the biggest highlight, I think, of our diversion services for PINS was that compared to 2007, there was a 39% reduction in PINS residential care services. That means no foster care, no detention, no group homes, and that's a big cost savings to the county as well. So that's one of the highlights. I'm going to talk about that. In our juvenile delinquency arena, we had 89% of the youth who participated in our JD diversion program were successful. That's a good rate. Going back to the PINS, this is a very important point. We have probation officers who go into the schools, and we've instigated what's called a pre-PIN service, where we're trying to earmark those cases before they actually become a referral, so we're trying to head those off at the path. We had 38 youth referred to the pre-PINS program. 63% of those were closed successfully and diverted from going to formal petition. And 60% of the youth referred for pre-pen services in 2008 have avoided further contact with the juvenile justice system. So that speaks very well for probation officers and their work with these youth. In our pretrial service program, we conducted 244 pretrial release reports for the courts. We have a very good success rate. People who were released under our supervision, 87%, successfully completed their period of supervision. That means we didn't have to violate people and return them back to the jail. So we're keeping people in the community, reducing the jail numbers. Criminal court supervision by offenses. I think I've talked about this before, but there's a breakdown in here of major supervision cases by offenses. DWI continues to be our number one offense that we supervise, and because of that, we do have a specialized DWI probation officer who focuses specifically on that type of offense, very specialized, very intense. And we will continue to do that. The other major category is property crimes is the second biggest. That would be your fraud, forgery, burglaries, petty larcenies, grand larcenies.
So, Pat, on page 17, you mentioned DWI. Is it under vehicle, part of the 226?
Yes, yes, it is. So 226 is okay. Vehicle and traffic. We completed 589 criminal court investigations for the courts in Tompkins County. That seems to be about average from last year. We continue to operate the intensive supervision program. We have two senior probation officers who carry a small intense caseload of 25 individuals. These are our high-risk people. This is an alternative to jail. We have a 53% success rate of our participants in ISP. Unfortunately, the state called me a couple days after this got printed with that new stat of 53%. We would like to improve that number, and we're going to be working on that performance measure for next year. Electronic monitoring. We have continued the electronic monitoring program. The electronic monitoring trends, according to this chart, have increased in 2008, from 2007 in the adults, but also particularly in the juvenile population. So we are using it with our adjudicated youth as an alternative to detention. So again, we're trying to keep youth out of the system, in the communities, in their families, and not incurring costs to the county through detention. Under technology monitoring, this is a new section to the report. This was not in last year. This began in mid-2008. Susan Moore heads up that program, is responsible for working with our vendor, and she does all the examinations of the computers and searches computers for pornography and chat line no-nos and things like that, and she prepares reports for the ongoing probation officer, gets them heads up where there's problems, where we can work with the treatment provider then and hopefully head things off before things get worse, or in some cases, sometimes we need to immediately violate people. That program this year is really taking off, and I expect that in next year's annual report, those numbers are really going to be increased. I don't know if everyone's reading paper, but it seems like every day there are things in there. The treatment court programs continue to move along. Ithaca Community Treatment Court has really increased its admissions since 2007. Felony drug court appears to be stable. There has been a change in judge there, and it's been a little slow so far this year, but I think it's because of the changeover. But we're continuing to see numbers there. Of course, our community service program continues to be very well received in the community. We did an incredible number of hours overall, 6,647 hours in the community. We have over 40 work sites in the community. Everybody benefits. It's a win-win situation for the work sites who get work done for them that they don't have to pay for outright, it's a win-win situation for our clients who learn how to give back, how to repay the community. They learn work skills. This has been a tremendously well-received program, we helped raise over $42,000 in charity at the Dump and Run program. That's one of our biggest work sites that we work for over the summer months. So that just cannot be denied, that the goodness of that program. Day reporting. We have 78% of people who come into the day reporting program are unemployed. 38% only have some high school. Major focus of that program is getting people to study for GED. We had 92 clients receive education services. 31% of those took an exam for the GED while in the day reporting program or following the release from the day reporting program, because we do continue to follow up with people after they leave. 90% of those who took the exam passed at least one subject, and 48% successfully earned their GED. So good benefits of that. And for employment highlights, in 2008, there were 97 job placements through the employment specialist who works with the jail population, day reporting, probation, and parole clients. And that doesn't even begin to touch base on the resumes that are completed and interviewing skills workshops that go on, how to write a cover letter, hand-holding through the interview process. The job placement really is the final outcome to a lot of work that happens before that. So those are just some of the highlights. And for 2009, many of our goals center around evidence-based practice. So two of those practices have to do with our risk and needs assessment, one for the adult population called COMPASS, and the other for the youth called YASI, Y-A-S-I. And the COMPASS instrument we are currently using. And the benefit to this instrument is that it's an actuarial risk assessment, has been proven to give scores for risk level in the community, recidivism, violence. And what we can do with that is allocate our resources for the people who rate medium to high risk. People for low risk then would need less of our attention. So it's a good tool to help us figure out where we should be putting our resources. How do we build caseloads? And how do we supervise? Same thing with the youth. And the youth, the COMPASS instrument we are already using, the youth assessment, we will be starting, we're going to be undergoing training in June for the family court unit. And the other evidence-based practice that we are instituting is called Thinking for a Change. And that is a 22-week curriculum that is designed to address criminal thinking errors. And we have a probation officer and someone from the mental health clinic, it's a collaborative effort, who will be co-leading this group. And that should be starting June. But it's designed to reduce recidivism by 33% if people can get through the program. It's designed to be done in a certain format and with fidelity. So we're looking forward to the outcome of that and hopefully extending that then to hopefully our ISP caseload, so maybe we can get our success rate up there. Our other goals have to do with creating our website. Susan Moore is going to be working on that. It's going to be much more interactive, much more user-friendly. Links to DPCA, DCJS, a place for victims to update addresses so that we can maintain contact with victims so that we can make them whole of restitution payments. So I'm really looking forward to that. And the other two other goals, of course, is for me to continue to educate you about what we do, and hopefully this is doing that today. And as well as we will be in the process of reviewing and updating our policy and procedure manual. I know the county is doing that at the county level. Boy, do we need to do it as well. And there's a work group currently involved in the Department of Probation Officers who are actively involved in doing that. So it's a great opportunity for them to learn and grow in their positions. So those are some of the highlights, and I hope that you enjoy reading the report. And if you have any questions, please feel free to get a hold of me.
Thank you, Pat. Do you have any questions briefly tonight, Martha?
Thank you very much, Pat. In a general sense, do you have any gut feelings about either a change in criminal behavior or in the types of crimes, or an increase in the level as a result of the economic situation. Have you seen any, kind of in the last 6 months or so, any change in?
I think our numbers are holding steady in terms of the number that we're seeing. But, you know, the criminal justice system is a lag time. You know, by the time we see people, it can be 6 months later. So I think that's yet to be seen, and we're watching that. In terms of the type of crimes, yeah, I'm a little concerned. There seems to be a lot more gun involvement. I'm concerned about that, weapons, and robberies. So more high, I think higher level serious offenses are coming our way. And also there just seems to be an increase in the sex offenses that I've noticed. I know our SORA registrable offenses have increased from like 23. We were steady at 23 for quite a while. Now we're like near 30. So those offenses as well seem to be coming to the forefront.
Thank you.
Thank you, Pat. If there's no other questions, I would ask you to summarize the goals very quickly at the end verbally. They weren't in the report. If you could give us maybe the one page.
I just did, actually. Think of the
No, I know. You summarized them, but we don't have them in here.
It's page 5.
Oh, sorry. Thank you.
Page 5, yes.
All right. I missed that.
Okay, great.
And I would also note to the legislators, a lot of what's in here is performance-based measurement. So this is an example of what we're trying to do throughout the whole organization. Thank you.
Thank you.
Are there any resolutions to be added to or withdrawn from the agenda? Seeing none, we'll move on. The consent agenda resolution is not expected to be controversial. That can pass in a single vote. I'll read the appointments, and then the various committee resolutions have been moved forward. For appointments, for Mental Health Subcommittee, Liz Norton. For Strategic Tourism Planning Board, Susan Monaghan. For the Environmental Management Council, Katie Kelly. For the Housing Fund Oversight Committee, this is Heather Filiberto, Martha Robertson, Pam Magasey, and Ed Marks as ex officio. For our resolutions, from Health and Human Services and Planning, Development, Environmental Quality Committees, Budget Adjustments, Various Departments, Resolution A. From Health and Human Services Committee, Resolution B, Dedication of the Conference Room at 55 Brown Road, Tompkins County Health Department. Government Performance Workforce Relations Committee, Resolution C.
Off, please.
Okay. Resolution D, Refund of School Taxes, Town of Newfield, Parcel 2814.31. From Planning, Development, and Environmental Quality Committee, Resolution E, Authorization to Continue the Home Ownership Program through the Use of Program Income Funds. Resolution F, Funding of Tourism Marketing and Advertising Grants. And Resolution G.
Is that the revised one?
Revised, yes, thank you. Revised one that's in your packet. And Resolution G, Award of Tourism, Capital Grant, Ithaca Children's Garden. Who'd like to move the consent agenda? Carol Chalk moves it. Frank Proto seconds. All in favor? Any opposed? That's unanimous. Thank you very much. We'll start. I don't think we have anyone here waiting for the resolutions from the public or from staff, so we'll start at the beginning of the agenda with Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee. Leslie McBean, Claire Bourne, Chair.
No report. The committee will meet next Wednesday.
Thank you. And Dooley Kiefer, Legislative Rules and Procedures Committee.
The committee met yesterday afternoon. We continue to slowly make our way through the rules, and we still are awaiting some comments from legislators.
Thank you.
Mike?
Questions?
Martha? I have a comment. Thank you for saying where you were going to start and then including the whole packet in the committee packet. Appreciate that.
You're welcome, but it didn't produce anything.
Well, I was away this weekend. I'll get to it. Thank you.
Health and Human Services Committee, Frank Proton.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The committee met last week, and just a couple of highlights. We had an update on the Catholic Charities immigrant program from two individuals, Ms. Chafee and Ms. Wessels. It was quite interesting. And one of the indicators was that they are placing individuals in jobs and being quite successful at it. It was well noticed that one of the places that they're placing these folks in is the RPM ecosystems, the new tree-growing installation out on the Dryden Road, and that's been met with a lot of success. Some of us suggested that they get a hold of Cooperative Extension because there are some other opportunities there as well for some of these people. The continuing saga on budget cuts drifted through the meeting. Lisa mentioned to us again about the hits on COFA, and we reviewed those. You know, it gets tougher and tougher as we go through it. Bob DeLuca was telling us about a major change in the mental health area, clinical restructuring, and that's going to be a four-year process, and he's able to handle that. The department is able to handle that. I think I'll just, in the interest of time, because I think you wanted to move along, I just want to remind you that the next committee meeting will be June 9th. And Alice Cole did tell us that as of last week, as of the meeting of May 12th, there are no reported cases of swine flu in the county, although that doesn't mean something isn't latent. And she advised us all to continue to wash our hands and cover our noses and mouths when we're sneezing. Some very simplistic sanitary rules. But stay diligent and stay vigilant. Thank you.
Thank you. Other questions? Dooley Kiefer?
Frank, on Resolution A, which was passed on consent, I didn't want to pull it off. I thought I could just ask you now. It refers to increase in hours during a period of time, but the time period isn't specified in the resolution. Do you know offhand what that time period is?
Wait, I'm sorry. Say again.
Resolution A, Youth Services. Nancy Zook's time was increased from 35 to 40 hours for a period. I didn't know if it was for summer only, or does it go beyond summer for helping out Julia Matic?
It may go beyond the summer, as I recall, but right now she's not sure because of the opportunity to work with the Workforce Improvement Board, Investment Board, and they're going to be sharing a lot of information, but we needed to do that temporarily.
Okay, and Pam?
Yes, Frank, I wanted to raise, and I don't know if it's something that your committee would take up or not, but people who live on South Hill have been dealing with the leftovers of pollution for the last 8 to 10 years, or actually longer than that. And just recently, there was they released the DEC figures, and there are figures for TCE in the neighborhood. I think it was 2,200 parts per meter or something. It was a vapor test that they did. It was done in the sewer, in a manhole, in the sewer along the sewer line. And I find that, and the amount that is acceptable, I believe, is between 50 and 100 parts per meter. And we have families, we have a baby that actually lives near that storm sewer. It's not a storm sewer, it's a sewer line. And at what point is this going to become, I mean, this is clearly a public health hazard. And I'm sorry, I don't mean to lay this on you, because it isn't, it has nothing to do with you, but it is something that it feels as if the health department might want to be involved in at this point, because it is clearly can have an impact on the health and welfare of the people who live on South Hill. So I would like to talk to you, and maybe we can figure out a way that I could bring this forward to your committee. But I just wanted to bring it up at this point.
Well, the other unsettling news from the news item that I was reviewing indicated that they're not sure. The DEC has moved the area of interest higher, geographically higher up Route 96B, and now they're looking at the potential for the old NCR building, part of which is in the incubator. It's been bought as an incubator. Mm-hmm. Part of it's occupied by Ithaca College. From what I was reading, the sewer separation from where it was influenced does not involve Ithaca College itself, but there are several firms on South Hill that are physically higher on the elevation scale.
It's also further east. This is further east than any place that they've looked.
Any place that they have looked, that they were concerned about some of the properties on Hudson Street, as
that's,
I read.
That's right, and Columbus.
So yeah, Street. let's talk. It might be something we ought to bring also to the Board of Health.
Yeah, well, that's what I just, it feels like I have something.
Okay, good.
Thank you, Pam. Thank you, Frank. We move on to Facilities and Infrastructure Committee. Leslie McBean, Claiborne, Chair.
No report. The committee will meet on Thursday.
Leslie, could I ask you briefly, is there any change in the schedule for Health Department Building Committee? Is that still just loitering along in terms of...
Moving along.
Okay. Moving on to Government Performance Workforce Relations Committee. Nathan Shinigawa, Chair.
Yes, the committee met last Friday. We had a very long discussion about foreclosures in the community, looking at the different properties and giving direction to the planning department and to David about those. After that, we had a discussion about pay equity legislation, we decided not to take any action on that and to table it indefinitely because there are several different types of several different pay equity pieces of legislation out there, and the committee at this time felt that it did not know enough to endorse one in particular because some of them overlap with each other. They might have enforcement and be in charge of one department versus another. So it wasn't something where we could just take all of them and just say, hey, let's all support this. And then also we discussed our policies, and we have a resolution here about that. And at this time, I'll move it. Resolution C, approving revisions and abolishing policies and procedures of the Tompkins County Government Administrative Policy Manual.
So moved. Is there a second? Jim Dennis. Discussion. Greg Stevenson.
I asked that this get pulled just so I could make a brief comment, and I want to comment about the policy that addresses the Tompkins Employees Federal Credit Union. I just don't want the action that we're going to take to occur without noting that the removal of this from the policy manual is in no way a reflection, a negative reflection on the credit union. The credit union evolved from the grassroots efforts of local employees many years ago. It's an excellent asset. So I just wanted to note that I think that benefit should be spoken of highly, and just to clarify that the removal of the policy is not intended to appear as a negative reference to the credit union.
Thank you. And we had a packet that described all of the policy changes from Paula Younger, and on that, it is still included in the new orientation packet, so it's not like employees do not get this information. Additional comments or questions for Nathan? Martha?
Not in this motion. I did want to...
Okay. And was it Carol?
Yeah. I had questions that I asked, and I think I got answered about the retention and disposition of records portion. My concern, and Paula and Joe were very helpful today. I just want to make a comment on the accessing of non-confidential records. My concern was that if each request needs to come separately to two departments, the one making the request and the one receiving the request, if it's non-confidential, if that gets burdensome to our employees, that we revisit that.
Thank you. And Dooley Kiefer?
I had concern about the same
okay.
policy.
I have a question for Nathan, but it's not on the resolution.
This particular resolution. Okay, we'll get back to you. Are ready to vote on Resolution C? It was on consent. All in favor? Are there any opposed? That's unanimous. Thank you. And questions for Nathan? I think Martha had one, then Pam.
I think this may have been the first meeting of your committee since we all discussed the direct report
right.
evaluations, and so there were issues. There was an issue about the discussion of integrity, and
you want to go back and look at that issue.
Yeah, and I'm just curious what, if there's an update on the panel, the panels.
Sure. Yeah. In terms of the integrity issue, the committee at the meeting felt that it wasn't necessary to add a separate integrity category inside of the direct report evaluations because much of the language that was in the original integrity category when we first talked about this was moved into the accountability category. And then also it was the feeling of the legislators that many of the actions that make up somebody that has integrity are consistently put throughout different aspects of the actual put in different categories in the performance in the direct performance evaluations. And so for that reason, the committee felt that it was unnecessary at this time to include an integrity category separately.
And composition? The panel composition?
In terms of the panel composition, the GPWR committee took a different approach than others, and we actually are supportive of having two people because we were unable to decide whether or not we wanted to have Leslin or Dooley be our representatives because both had interest. Then, yeah, we actually were hoping that they would alternate. Two of them would, one would do two and the other would do two. And that is the wish of the GPWR committee.
So they would each be on two of the panels?
Right.
Okay.
Kathy, and then, on that point, and then I'll get back to you, Pam. Is it on the point of the panel composition?
Yes, it is.
Kathy, then Frank.
I know that was a long evening and a long discussion, but the entire legislature came to a decision that is different than what the group that you're reporting subsequently evidently came to later. So I'm a little bit confused about what's happened with our committee structure and our legislature, that now committees make decisions after the legislators made a decision, because the way I heard it was a little different than that, but it wouldn't surprise me.
I'll let Mike respond to that, and then I'll add to that.
Yeah, I think what happened here is that there was supposed to be the chair of this committee.
Correct.
Serve on all four.
Or the designee.
Or his designee.
All four.
Correct.
To serve on all four.
I'm with you so far.
And nobody, Nathan can't do it, and nobody could do all four.
That's not true. I told Nathan I can. I asked for Nathan.
Were you at the meeting?
And Dewey said
he's a little early.
When we discussed this,
say that to the chair.
When we discussed this, the sense of what the situation was, Leslin, I'm sorry if your interest got misrepresented, I think was that nobody could do all four.
I see.
And so we decided to split it between two.
And also,
in light of the new information, perhaps that recommendation to the legislature could be reconsidered.
Well, Dewey, could you do all four as well? I thought that's what you said as well. Okay. Well, then, it's fine. We can take it back to committee.
Okay. Thank you. And is there, separate from that issue, I think Pam had her hand up for a different issue.
Well, I did. A couple of questions occurred to me just recently, and it had to do with when I was first on the legislature, we had this whole discussion, and I thought there was a plan being put into place to do performance review goal setting or evaluations for all employees. And I guess I'm sort of curious what had happened to that, because we seem to be on a very slow track here. And I really don't know what's going on. I shouldn't say that, because I don't know. And then the other question I had to do with whether we also had some discussion at one point about we spend money every year on training our employees, and has anybody ever looked at what we are getting for our dollar? Are these trainings that we are doing being effective or not? And that just was something else that I thought perhaps might be looked at.
Yeah, the training idea is something that we could definitely add to committee. In terms of extending the performance evaluations to the rest of the county organization, I mean, I think that...
I think it was a former goal of the Human Resources Committee to look at the consistency of performance evaluations throughout. It wasn't necessarily applying our particular model, but anyway, you can proceed. I just wanted to clarify. Yeah.
And I know that that's having... I think that the direct performance evaluations are kind of the first step to that because, you know, if you have the actual leadership of the organization engaged in evaluations, then you can use a similar model to and bring it throughout the rest of the organization. So I think that's the sense of kind of...
I thought they were in parallel tracks. I thought we had one set up for direct reports and one set up for...
Not at this moment, no. And then also in terms of the department head legislature meeting where we talked about performance evaluation and stuff, I think that's something that I'd like to discuss in our next GPWR committee. It's just that administration has been bogged down for obvious reasons with the targets and budgets.
Thanks. Jim, you had your hand up to answer?
Yes, I did. Pam, I remember pretty clearly when we, the personnel committee, took up these two items, and one of the questions we asked a couple of years ago was what department heads were currently doing, and they reported to the committee what they were currently doing. It was never my impression, and if I'm mistaken, I certainly apologize, but it was never my impression that both were going down the road at the same time. Given the four directs, as one legislator, I would sort of want to get that concluded before we do anything else. Also, in terms of the makeup of the committee, I was aware of some emails that went back and forth between a variety of people today, and I threw one in that if there are people who want to serve on the committee, I was currently the only person who said they would be on four times. And if someone wants my seat, you got it. Because the money's not good, and I will get my shot at the four directs from the seat right now.
Actually, I offered to be on all four of them as well.
Yeah, I think...
And I relented and gave it to you.
At this point, I think we do have five people who are willing to serve go through all four reviews. Myself, Leslin, Jim, Frank, and Kathy Lucerera. Martha.
I heard the chair of G-Power say that was going to go back to committee.
I didn't actually say it's going back to committee, but we do have a fifth person who's able and willing to meet go through four things. So.
Yeah, I mean, I think, is it, now when we were discussing this, did we say it was the committee's choice for the designee or the chair's choice for the designee? Because obviously then we could make it happen faster if it's the committee.
The chair asked the committee, you were asked as chair to choose a designee, and you brought it to committee.
Okay, all right. Yeah. Well, then.
Excuse me, when I raised my hand, to you, not Nathan. I mean, you sent out the memo and said, who wants to be on the committee? And I raised my hand. And you responded to me. It wasn't the committee that responded.
No, yes, but there was a particular seat because Nathan didn't want to serve as chair of Government Performance Workforce Relations, which is spelled out in our orientation.
Right.
Nathan wanted to have a discussion with his committee about an alternate, and that's appropriate.
Right.
I saw several other hands. Frank, then Martha.
Mike, I hate to put you through this, but there are four individuals and a fifth individual who is an alternate.
No, there's five. As of the GPWR meeting, they did not have the full information that Leslin was willing to serve and able to serve all four, so they made a decision to do two and two. Now we have that information, so the five people that are able to have been named already.
Yeah.
GPWR can then take that under advisement, and Nathan has the authority himself to designate someone without going to committee.
Okay, well, I have to further confuse the issue. I agreed to do the first one. But depending on when the reviews are set up, I mean, I have to keep that. And I think that's true of anybody.
Yeah,
we may not be able to make all four because of
everyone intends to.
Committee.
Yes, the scheduling will be an issue.
As long as you understand.
I'd like to move on, but I have Martha's hand.
Will the meetings of the panel be open to all of us?
The first meeting hasn't even been set yet, but, we have... Some advisement from personnel is going to be helping us with. I think it's kind of like the search process that any legislator can sit in.
So we'll be notified of the meetings.
when they're set. Carol?
Yeah, I'd just like to point out there the values that we were deciding between when we visited this question to begin with were the what was to be gained on the one side of having consistency. If we had all the whole panel the same, that there would be consistency. That value weighed against the value of having as many of us participate in this process as possible. And over the next many years that we are evaluating reports, you know, at some point we might strive for one versus the other. If this is having to go back to committee, first of all, if it drags on long enough, if it goes on past the mid-June, I'll throw my hat in the ring. I said I couldn't do it because we were going to be starting them sooner. If we have made a valiant attempt to go on one side of that target area and haven't been able to achieve it, then let's have some committee bring it forward that we should go for the other side.
I'm not going to allow continued discussion on this. We had a discussion of the legislature. We came to a conclusion. Nathan has the power to designate.
Yeah. And I was just going to say that since the information is clear now, I mean, I think I can just shoot an email to the committee,
okay,
and we'll just approve it that way. All right.
Are there any other questions for Government Performance Workforce Relations Committee? Seeing none, we'll move on to Planning, Development, and Environmental Quality Committee. Pam McAsee, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to let Julie, she had some report from the Policy Committee to speak to.
Yes, thank you.
That's fine now.
Is that okay? I mean, and then I have the resolutions.
Great.
Okay.
Wait, did we ever vote on the
resolution C?
No.
We did.
I believe it was unanimous because it was on consent.
Oh, I see. All right.
Julie, quick report.
The Policy Committee of the MPO met this afternoon, and the item of business that I thought you all would be interested in was a result of the MPO's Planning Committee reviewing all the possible projects that were on the lists that you had previously seen to determine which ones could be advanced because Warren Road's $3.5 million got freed up for other uses for our projects locally because of this Warren Road being given stimulus money. That was the background. Mm-hmm. And the projects that we approved today were phase three of the Cuba Waterfront Trail construction, Forest Home Traffic Calming Phase 1, completing the design, West Seneca Road Bridge, which is way out on the west side of our county, construction, the Black Diamond Trail bridges being designed, the last two bridges, and there were members of the public there to lobby for that one, and the replacement bus project, which will give a gadabout several more vehicles, and TCAT, many more buses. The buses will replace all of the ones that have outlived their useful lives, which was a good surprise. That's really good news. The less than wonderful news is that they will all be the clean diesel buses. They're not pursuing hybrids at the moment because their experience with the ones that they had gotten by going in jointly with Onondaga County have not lived up to expectations. And so it won't be till 2013 that they will be able to consider, I gather, any new buses, which might include hybrids. So that, for me, was the less good news because I'm concerned about emissions. But I think it was very good news that all of these are being advanced.
And these are being recommended onto the state, if I understand correctly, right? From the MPO?
Yes, there's really no question that these will be advanced.
Okay, thank you. Quick questions on that report, and we'll get to Pam. Martha.
Yeah, the other bad news is that all the buses then will also, again, reach the end of their lives at the same time, more or less, in a number of years from now. But then I thought I heard at one of the TCAT meetings relative to the route changes that the hybrids were getting something like
4 miles to the gallon,
yeah,
and
the diesels
are getting 5 miles, or five or four. I mean, there was only a little bit of difference.
The differentiation is more than that, and that's one of the reasons that we went to Syracuse to run the numbers again. The hybrids are not doing as well as we had anticipated.
They're considerably more expensive to buy.
Right.
And so the gas mileage was not not as good as the diesel. And in fact, but our hybrids were doing better than the hybrids that Syracuse evidently has. And so it seems to be a problem that has a kink in these models. So. So it was substantial enough that it felt as if we really didn't have the luxury, and it's not a luxury, but we really felt we had to make a hard decision in terms of going towards the diesel as opposed to the hybrids.
Okay. Yeah. Could I add a tagline to that?
Is that something we can have a conversation with outside the room? Okay. Pam, the regular report?
Okay, I just wanted to say I'm not going to give a report tonight. I'm going to give a report at our next legislative meeting. We had a meeting last Wednesday, and so I will wait to do that. But I do have two resolutions that I would like to put forward.
I did see Mike's hand on...
Yeah.
I'll get back. Go ahead.
After the resolutions. Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Okay, I'd like to move resolution H, Tompkins County comment on items not addressed in the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation final scope for draft supplement generic environmental impact statement, otherwise known as DSGEIS, on the oil, gas, and solution mining regulatory program for the Marcellus Shale, and I so move.
And Mike Hattery seconds. Is there discussion? Kathy Luce Herrera.
Would somebody just summarize for me and for the public what this is about?
Well, I can certainly attempt to do that. When the gas companies came in and want to drill to the Marcellus Shale, it is a very different procedure than what we have traditionally seen in terms of drilling in New York State. And so the state put together what's called a scoping document. And it was the beginning of this look at the environmental impact and setting up regulations for allowing this kind of drilling. And so when the state released its scoping document, which was late last fall, I believe, there were certain things that they did not include in the scoping document that people felt should have been included. And so this is a resolution pointing to that fact and trying to get the state to change that. For example, the state, this drilling, as we all know, this drilling is going to be a really fairly large operation in our county. I think there's something like 36% of the properties have now leases on them. So, and this is just one county in all of New York State. And so the concern is that with all of this permits being issued and drilling going on, who is going to oversee this? Who is going to make sure that this is done in the proper way? Because unlike the other drilling that has gone on, this drilling has the potential for having an enormous impact on our life here in Central New York. And I do not believe that I'm being over dramatic by saying that. I think because it goes so deeply, it gets into the to down where our aquifers are. It has the potential for polluting wells. It is, and so it needs to be regulated carefully. Department of Environmental Conservation did not feel it was within their scope of the looking at the impact, environmental impact of this, to include something about the number of inspectors that they would have. So this is one of the things that this resolution asks for.
Can I just a brief follow-up? Number of inspectors, and can you just
number of inspectors, permitting, delay permitting until you have an adequate staff, a severance tax, adequate to allow for adequate permit fees, others. I mean, Pam, if you want to add any of the other results.
No, but what was your
question? That's what I'm hoping for, is that we just get on the record those specifics so that the public can hear what we're suggesting be added to the...
Okay, well then, he just said them.
And the last item was what substances are actually pumping into the ground.
That one. Thank you.
Okay.
Those are important.
So I have Jim, then Martha next.
I was informed by one of the 11 viewers that we have, that we'd have no viewers this evening.
Okay, so people can keep their comments.
They are short.
Okay.
We're off here.
They're off tonight. Martha,
we're off.
Well, no, we're on here, but it ain't getting out, if you know what I mean.
All right, Martha, then Frank.
This follows up the resolution we passed in December, advising DEC before they actually wrote their draft rules. They wrote us, after the draft rules came out, Scott Doyle from the Planning Department analyzed it and came back to us and said, well, they included this, but these other, they included a lot of what we asked for, but a bunch of things they did not, and in particular said that they certain issues needed to be handled by the legislature. So that's what these are trying to address. I'm really pleased that we're passing this. I would really like to see Representative Arcuri added to the list. It's not, is that an amendment,
okay,
or is that just, can we do that?
I think that's probably friendly on the list of the final result.
Yes.
Okay.
I'm delighted.
Great.
Okay.
And
thank
I
you.
Think I have Frank next.
Kathy, a couple of other points that are in this resolution. One is the fact that the 2005 energy policy, the EPA energy policy, particularly exempts hydrofracking from the list. And that's what's causing all the aggravation. So we want to highlight that. And the other one is the one I mentioned earlier about the extending the comment period to 60 days. There's so much material that it's, I won't say it's impossible, but unless you have a staff devoted to just reviewing this particular item, nobody's going to get through this stuff in 30 days. We heard at that special meeting about well monitoring and the importance of having a baseline test. I've mentioned that as the Health Committee a couple of times, and Steve Penningroth came out with a regimen that was distributed, and we were treated to at least an abbreviated piece of it yesterday at the WRC. But there are a lot of pieces to this that simply time does not permit the review. So I would encourage everyone, yes, to support this. I don't think anyone will not support it. But I I really do think that we need to highlight the fact that we need the extra time. And in addition to Mr. Arcuri, I think we ought to add to these municipal officials our federal reps. In addition to Arcuri, we need to add Schumer and Gillibrand. Hinchy is on this list already.
Is that friendly?
Yes.
Okay.
Good idea, Frank.
And I think
I have those occasionally.
I think Dooley had a final comment.
In the very first whereas, since natural gas is already being used to replace coal and other fuels that emit more greenhouse gases, I would like to change the second line to read, a relatively low-impact source of energy that is being used to replace coal and other fuels that emit more greenhouse gases during a transition.
So you're changing the word could to is being used to.
Yes.
Is that friendly?
Yeah. That's fine.
And is, I guess the second. Okay, are we ready to come to a vote? With those changes and that explanation, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? That's unanimous. Thank you very much, Pam. On to I.
Resolution I, award of tourism capital grant, Cayuga Nature Center, and I so move.
Is there a second? Muslim being Claiborne. This is $100,000 over 4 years, $25,000 a year with certain conditions. Pam, give your hand up.
No, actually, you just said what I was going to say.
Oh, I'm sorry. Mike Hatter.
Committee's happy with the projected fund balance given this commitment over a four-year period?
Yes, they voted 4-1.
You mean the fund balance for the tourism money?
Yes.
Yes, that was. This was all considered after it was, you know, after we realized that there was going to be the money. The dollar amount would be reduced this year in that fund. So, it was taken into consideration.
Frank Proto, then Jim.
Mike, the reason I voted against this at the committee level, even though there was an attempt to assuage my concern, the synopsis that was given I felt was completely inadequate on a grant of this size, regardless of the amount of time. The part of the criteria indicates that anything like this, and I'm a fan of the Cuban Nature Center, and have supported it in other ways over the years. Part of the criteria requires that there be a tourism component, that they're drawing people in, and that the marketing plan has to show that there's a plan to do that. We were not treated to that. We were told that the synopsis was adequate. I didn't feel if this grant was $1,000 or $2,000 or $5,000, I might feel more, more comfortable with it. But a $100,000 grant and embarking on a fundraising program in this environment to actually back that up, I frankly thought that we needed more information. I tried to get this tabled at the meeting so that we could get more information. That didn't go anyplace. So the only option I had was to vote against it.
Thank you, Frank, for the explanation. Jim, then Martha.
I have two comments. One being, on the way down here this evening, I heard Bruce Stoff on the radio from CVB talking about a 14% decrease in the amount of rooms, and the hoteliers in the area are reducing their costs so that they can attract people to come for the summertime. And in effect, that will reduce the overall take because the amount of money, the percentage is based on the cost of the room. The other question I have, and I know it's not about this particular item, but it is about tourism and tourism grants. Can somebody tell me where we are or where the STPB is on the Cornell application from the library?
That has been tabled by the STPB.
Right. And will it be coming to us?
Well, when they pass it, if they pass it, it will come to us. I think that their bylaws say they can table something for up to 3 months. I would expect it would come as soon as they. I would expect it will come at the next meeting, but I don't know that.
I guess my comment and question is, if the grant, the way the regs are written now, there seemed to be some question whether Cornell was eligible to apply for the money, and according to the way the regs are written, if they're eligible to apply, I mean, are they eligible to apply for the money according to the way the regs are currently written? Does anyone know?
Well,
about that?
I was on the Capital Grants Committee, and it was my opinion that we had nothing in the regs that would prohibit Cornell from applying.
Okay, thank you. That's all I mean.
Are we ready to go to vote? I have Martha next.
Just explained. Martha Armstrong at CCAD is oversees this program, and she is very, watching very closely on their numbers. She said that a lot of what they plan to do with the money is to improve the visibility of their entrance. They are right on the scenic byway, so they get a lot of traffic right to Tagannock Falls. But people just drive on by because they don't realize that it's there. So they really were impressed with the proposal as something that was going to bring people, many more people, into the Cuban Nature Center. And my understanding is that it's important that recipients show out-of-town visitors, but it doesn't hinge, getting money doesn't hinge on people saying, I came to Tompkins County because of the Cuba Nature Center. But so it's sort of part of the milieu that there are a bunch of things to do on the west side of the lake. They support each other in a sense.
I'd like to move to a vote. Frank, then Carol.
Jim, the concern about the Johnson Art Museum, it's
right.
not...
Oh, I'm sorry, not the library.
Not the library.
Art Museum.
I'd be interested in the outcome of that as well as a member of the advisory board for the Johnson when that hits. But it's not an application that Cornell University has submitted. It's an application that the Johnson Art Museum has submitted.
Since that hasn't come...
Pardon me, but it is...
It's actually not on the table.
But
that's not on the resolution tonight, folks.
Speaking of this particular item, the description that Martha just gave, I felt was inadequate because it didn't have numbers or a program attached. A lot of it involves earth moving, and that's wonderful, but that is not, in my opinion, enough to draw tourists into the community. We were not presented with a plan. Again, we have more deliberation often over a $5,000 item than we have over a $100,000 item. And I was simply asking for some more information. I'm not saying this isn't a worthwhile project. It's just one that we ought to have some more information on.
Okay, thank you. I think we're great. Carol.
Yeah, I have a comment on both of these questions, the eligibility and then on the moving us back towards the Cayuga Nature Center. As a professional in the field of grants management and grant getting for 23 years, I just would urge us, when that comes to us, if that comes to us, which would have to come through the STPB, through the PDEC committee, and then to the legislature, that we be very careful to distinguish the questions of eligibility from the question of prioritization of spending. Cornell is a 501c3
Carol,
it's
not a resolution on the floor tonight.
And that is...
You had a second point?
And that...
You need to speak to the resolution, Carol.
Yes, I...
This point is not to...
on the floor, and as people are thinking about this coming up, there have been questions raised, and I think that it's...
I think you had a second point that probably spoke to the resolution.
On the matter of the Cayuga Nature Center, we had a lengthy discussion at the committee meeting about the question of... Well, several questions related to the recommendations of those we retain to advise us on the capital grants, on the amount that we want to keep in the capital grants fund for this and future projects, the suitability of the project, the fact that there was no requirement, nor had we asked for the full packet, and that we were happy to accept the recommendations of that committee, particularly pertinent to whether the reporting requirements had been fulfilled and would be fulfilled in the future, and that was sort of almost a minor question. We had also discussions about the advisability of tying up the money for 4 years versus a shorter period. And after exploring all of those questions, we did come to a 4-1 vote.
Thank you. Are we ready to vote? All in favor of resolution I?
Aye.
And are there any opposed?
Opposed. I am too.
1, 2, 3 opposed. That passes. If there's no further report from Plan Development and Environmental Quality, thank you, Pam. Michael, you had a question?
Yeah, on the list of projects that were going forward from the MPO Policy Committee, Julie?
MPO. MPO. I thought you said Enfield. Sorry.
I said MPO.
Okay, thank you.
Well, on the below the funding line was the Red Mill Road Bridge on this list.
This is the only chart we saw at our meeting. We were told that many people proposed many projects, but the group finally agreed on this list, so I don't know what else was on the list.
So you only saw what was above the funding line?
That's right.
Strikes me as an extremely Ithaca-centric type funding package that the rural communities in the county continually have to suffer with.
The bridge on the west side of our county is not Ithaca at all.
Well, I'm talking about other projects that were funded.
Okay, thanks for the question. We're going to move on to Budget, Capital, and Finance Committee. Jim Dennis, Chair.
Thank you. Well, Enfield is part of Ithaca in Tompkins County. I think. Is it agreed? May 29th, we're having not the ordinary day. We have our meeting, obviously, and the main focus of the meeting will be to set the target for the departments that the county administrator and his staff have been working with, almost everyone who has a budget in Tompkins County, to arrive at something that we hope they can live with, but the committee will set a target at that time, and I implore you as legislators to weigh in any way you can with all that, because it will be the beginning of the process that continues until well into October. Last committee meeting, it's all about budget all the time. Very few other things were discussed, and it looks, if I look ahead, it appears as if it's going to be about that all the rest of the year. So, and if anything else pops up, I'll certainly let you know, if it doesn't have something to do directly with budget.
When and where is the 29th meeting?
I'm sorry?
When and where is the 29th meeting?
It's in the usual place at 3:30.
On a Friday.
Yeah, it is.
And just for clarification, because that meets after the packets go out for our next legislature meeting, which is June 2nd, there will have to be a resolution in the packet pending committee action. So just be aware of that when you see it. The committee is not active.
And the reason is obvious that we did not go on the 25th of May.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. On to Public Safety Committee, Martha Robertson, Chair.
Since I was out of town, I want to thank Mike Sigler, Vice Chair, for taking over the meeting and hand it to him.
Mike Sigler.
And I wanted to thank Martha Robertson, because as in anything in life, preparation is the hard part. And this was a very easy meeting to run because of the preparation. We started Sheriff's Office. I'm going to go through this pretty quickly because I know we're kind of on a schedule here. The Sheriff is working on a new sex offender watch registration and management program. And that should be operational in 60 days. We have a little time there. What it will allow the public and vulnerable populations to do is to register on a website, and they can receive automatic notification of a sex offender in their area or if somebody actually moves into the area. And it will also act as like a clearinghouse for information for really the entire state. So the whole program costs about $7,000 a year. So he thinks that's a bargain. I have to agree with him. It should be interesting when this goes to launch, and we'll see how it works. So, the other thing we talked about was, as you know, the state is not reimbursing us for state readies now from the jail. We talked a little bit about that. The sheriff, obviously, well aware of that. He talked a little bit on it. Has plans on dealing with that. The interesting thing we heard from parole was that parole hearings are actually moving up on the schedule to cut down on the amount of time. And apparently that's the first time that's ever happened in the history of New York State. So that was interesting. The other people talking were probation and community justice. We had a report on the intensive supervision program, electronic monitoring program, and the service work alternatives program. Just on the last one, electronic monitoring program. you know, there was a good deal of talk about that. Personally, I thought it was a great program. I think maybe we should have an eye towards expanding that. It's $94.20 per month per person, so compare that to actually putting someone in jail. Cost-effective program. We talked about, like I said, the SWAT program. 31 individuals in that program in 2008 for a total of 3,980 hours of community service. So we also talked about the juvenile, the JACS program, Juvenile Accountability Community Service Program. We moved on to the, the ITS department and the LETSS program. We are replacing all three servers that are now used to house all the public safety data by law enforcement and other agencies in the county. That should be completed in about a week. We are also working on a hold harmless statement between all the police agencies that are willing to allow, this will allow a shared use of the live scan devices in the county. There are three right now, one's in the jail, the Sheriff's Department, Road Patrol, and the City of Ithaca Police Department. This is kind of a neat system. Instead of rolling your finger, I don't know if you've ever done a background check, rolling your finger across ink onto a card, which is then sent to a state. It's going to be done electronically, so you'll be able to basically have fingerprints on whoever enters this digital fingerprinting database. So that will replace the traditional and will supposedly be cheaper, so we will see. But it will allow, this hold harmless agreement will allow villages to participate in this as well. So that's what we are working on. We had an update on the PAD program, Public Access Defibrillator Program. That is moving along. A lot more goes into this than just hanging something on a wall, which we learned. We're going to have to maybe do some wiring on calling 911 directly if you pick this system off the wall. There's going to be some training involved. We are going to need a new trainer because someone is leaving the program before it even starts, but apparently they've been of great help to get it going. So we talked a lot about that. Also, we talked about OAR, and we had a discussion of the oversight of that program, which is now being overseen, which apparently it was not before. And we did not hear about any complaints, which we may now that that's out there, of who is overseeing it, but it seemed like they had a pretty good handle on it. We also, the thing that took up the most time talking was, of course, something by Nathan. We did talk about a ban on cell phone texting. I'm surprised, you know, we haven't brought that forward, but I expect that to be on our agenda eventually, either as a member item or back in committee. It was voted, it did not get through out of committee, it was voted down 2-2, but if it's something, you know, we want to discuss further, clearly we can.
If I just might, for clarification, it's a legislation that asks the state to have a text message driving.
We've got to play harder ball than that.
Some of us didn't think it went far enough, and some of us thought it went too far.
Right.
If there are other things people could read in the minutes, would that be
that would be
a
fine,
good
Mike,
place
and
to
that
end?
Is about it.
All right. Is there any? Are there any questions regarding public safety? If there are none, we'll move on to minutes of the previous meeting, May 5th. Who'd like to move this? Frank Proto? Any seconds? Pam McAsey? All in favor of minutes from May 5th, please raise your hand.
Move to adjourn.
Any opposed? That's unanimous. Move to adjourn. Who seconds? Mike Hattery. All in favor of adjourning.
Mike, is the public meeting across the way is open to the public?
It is open to the public, but it's a continued conversation with Cortland County Legislature regarding our support for TC3.
May I make one comment? Long about 7 o'clock, the intern left, and I'm hoping she had a better offer.